Brought to you thanks to Suaco and AGD Systems. This is Highways Voices from Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024.
Welcome to Amsterdam again as Intertraffic 2024 draws to a close at the Rai Exhibition Centre. It might be day four of four, but that doesn't mean things slow down. It's another Highways Voices brought to you thanks to the support of Suaco and AGD Systems.
Sponsored by Suaco and AGD Systems. Highways Voices from Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024.
What's the biggest issue facing the highways industry in the UK? Well, whether it's true or not, certainly perception-wise, and what the newspapers will tell you, is potholes. So anything that can fix potholes is something we need to find out more about. So I've come to the stand where there is the multi-patcher. Now, the multi-patcher has been brought to the UK by friend of Highways News, Neil Levitt, but the actual kit comes from Australia. So I've met up with Tony Dunlop, who is from Osroad Manufacturing in Brisbane, Australia, but he's over here talking about his multi-patcher product, which Neil Levitt is distributing in the UK. And, Tony, explain what the multi-patcher does.
It's a road maintenance, piece of road maintenance equipment. It's designed to for fixing road failures, potholes, edge brakes, depressions, any sort of any failure in a road. They don't really get used on motorways, mainly used on secondary, tertiary road networks, where the road surface has been chip sealed and the original seal is a chip seal surface, and they're prone to cracking and failures.
And just give a bit of context, what sort of issue are potholes in Australia? Because I should imagine that, you know, I've been to Australia a few times, I can't imagine ice is a particular issue and the water expanding causing the potholes that we're used to here.
No, we don't really have freeze-thaw potholes, but we do have plenty of potholes and plenty of road failures. A lot of the network in Australia is ageing and was built for another era when the trucks and the truck loads were a lot smaller than they are now. Historically, a lot of freight was carted around Australia on the rail network. That's degraded, and a lot of the agricultural freight goes by highway now, and the truck loads have just got bigger and bigger. Trailers have got bigger, so they're often tracking off the edges, off the shoulders of the road, cracking away the edges of the road, just damaging things all around. A lot of the road infrastructure just wasn't built for what it's being used for now.
And so what's so special about the multi-patcher?
We do this spray injection patching system. It's all done from the cab of the car, the truck. They were, I guess, developed and have become more and more automated over the years due to high labour costs in Australia and lack of labour in rural Australia. We also have the ability to do spray seal and surface dressing with the truck. So that's a combination that isn't available, as far as I'm aware, anywhere else. So you've got all the advantages of the spray injection patching, which tends to get used less and less on our trucks now because it's slower. It is effective, but it's a lot slower. You just don't cover the ground. If you've got any failure that's running a long way down the road in length, then we use the rear of the truck and use our paving system.
Now, there isn't one here, because how many of them are there actually in Europe at the moment?
There's two in Europe. They're both in the UK. There's four on order via a multi-patcher. They're being built currently. They're in production, and they will be here probably within 6 months.
Okay, so that explains why they're out actually fixing roads. You can't have one sitting in Amsterdam for the week just for people to look at. So here we are in Amsterdam. So you've got a foothold in the UK and you're going to grow there. You're going to try and conquer Europe then?
That's the idea. So Neil and the guys from Multipatcher are launching a European branch distribution. So that's the reason we're here, is to really launch Multipatcher EU.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Tony. Good to meet you.
Brought to you thanks to Suaco and AGD Systems. This is Highways Voices from Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024.
We've got two guests next on Highways Voices as I've come to the Unoptic stand. Unoptic, great friends of Highways News. So it's great to meet up with Tobias Deubel, who is the basically the head of the Enforcement Division of Unoptic, and friend of Highways Voices, John Piper, who's Sales Director of Unoptic in the UK. Gentlemen, thank you for your time on an extremely busy stand here this afternoon. 2 years on from the last Intertraffic, what's new on your stand?
So exactly as you say, Paul, with it being every 2 years, it's always good to re-show what we're very good at and all the systems that we're successfully selling around the world. But it's particularly exciting to be able to show some new stuff. There's a couple of things that we're really showing on the stand this year. One of the ones that I'm very personally very, very sort of proud and keen to talk around is our latest intelligent ANPR camera. So we call that Guardovia. It's a small, compact, but increasingly capable ANPR device. And we've already sold and deployed it in a number of challenging circumstances around the world. And through what we've learned and through what we've developed, it's a really exciting opportunity to not just provide new product, but it opens up new markets for new ways of doing things, not just for Unoptic, but as I say, for our partners and our global customer base.
I'm interested, I'm not sure which one of you has to have this headache more than the other, but the standards, the approvals and so forth of enforcement systems, from what I understand, are completely different in just about every single country. How do you, as a company that is providing kit that you want to use around the world, coping with that challenge?
Well, Paul, we are around for 90 years in that business. You're very experienced, and I like to say that this actually is one of our key differentiators. So we are really experienced and we're really good at handling and dealing with exactly these challenges. We know about the special requirements in each and every market. We're dealing with, as you rightly say, all these type approval agencies, be it the Home Office in the UK, but also the PTB in Germany, METAS, NMI, to name just a few. And as you rightly said, there is many, many of them. And one of our core competencies is to provide solutions and to build kit that fulfills the extremely high requirements of these agencies, and that's one of our core competencies, basically, to deal with that and to provide our customers solutions that are type approved and homologated.
While I was waiting to chat to you, I was overhearing conversations that were taking place between your team here and visitors to the stand, and there was a lot of talk about emerging markets that you're moving into. You're not just staying in Europe, Australia, Middle East and US, you're actually moving pretty much globally.
Oh yes, that's very true, and we proudly presented and released some press releases over the past weeks. We are moving into Latin America markets, for example, signed huge contracts in Colombia and Ecuador, but also looking in places in Africa, North Africa, for example, bringing exactly the competence I mentioned into these emerging markets and bringing road safety actually to these emerging markets, because as these countries build their infrastructure and as these countries face more and more traffic, they face more and more fatalities and well, death on the road. And apart from doing business, it is really part of our DNA to make roads safer, and well, therefore we love to bring our competence and our systems, products and solutions to these emerging countries.
One of the interesting things, John, that I've noticed over the years that I've been writing about changing driver behavior by technological enforcement systems is the acceptance. It used to be seen as a bad thing and a war on motorists and so forth, but we're kind of at the opposite end now, where certainly in the UK, a set of schemes, don't know if they're Unoptic or not, but that doesn't matter, of switch off of cameras in Glasgow has actually been met with anger and horror by people who don't want them switched off. Do you find that makes it easier to bring new products to market and to open new opportunities, the fact that people are now far more supportive of what you're doing?
I think there's a few things there. As Tobias mentioned, 90 years of experience across multiple countries, we've got that full remit of the local areas and how understanding, experienced they are with the enforcement opportunity and the rationale for that enforcement. We try and take all of that experience and knowledge wherever we go, and as a result of not just the technology that we provide, but the messaging and the ability to deliver and design, it all helps to craft that message. The other thing that we're very, very supportive of, and we see a lot, there's a lot of real good global work, and you'll be very familiar with the idea of Vision Zero. Vision Zero is you know, something that clearly we truly believe in, and we feel that we've got all of the capabilities to support that across the world. And that common understanding of what this ultimate goal is, to try and save lives and reduce deaths to zero on the world's across the world, is a message that is easy to buy into, but it's also an enabler to have those conversations in a very progressive way.
And Tobias, finally, obviously loads of new products. John mentioned the Gardovia product on the stand this year. What's the next big thing, and potentially what might we be seeing here in 2 years' time?
Well, we're actively working on what we call sensor fusion, integrating more and more features into our systems, and that is what you can see on the booth already today, but in early pilot stages at this point in time. We're integrating additional sensors like noise detection sensors, but also technology that allows us to detect the use of mobile phones or not wearing seatbelts. And using the capabilities of artificial intelligence enables us now to see a lot more things going on than just speeding and just jumping red lights. So we're now talking about illegal U-turns, illegal turners, left turns, right turns, blocking the box, tailgating. So many, many more things that we can see and enforce by using what we call sensor fusion. So using multiple sensors, all integrated into the more capable CPUs now with our software suite to enable us to see all these infringements and make use of them.
And the other sort of real benefit and power of Unoptica at an event like this is that gone are the days where we would have a solution to a problem. We have an increasingly capable solution, but we're engaging with all of our partners and customers to understand what the problems are, because there's a real hybrid of technology that can do multiple things. But we're not the holders of all of those solutions and what they could be used for. We work with our partners to understand those and make them suitable for the markets.
Gentlemen, this is an extremely busy stand, one of the busiest I've seen in all the halls here. You've given me more of your time than I really deserved, so thank you for your time. I'll let you get back to chatting to visitors. Thank you.
From Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024, Highways Voices.
So my next guest is Henk Swartouw, who is the president of the European Cyclists Federation, chaired a session on transforming micromobility. Now, it sounds like that's the sort of subject that might be quite difficult to cover in 45 minutes. What did you discuss in your session?
Well, it is difficult to cover it in 45 minutes. Also because micromobility is growing and technology is developing very rapidly. But of course, some of the technology is really old. I mean, bicycles, they're 200 years old, they're micromobility. But every day we see new types of micromobility on the roads of our cities, our towns. And it's difficult for regulators to keep up because technology develops faster than legislation. And it's even harder for infrastructure and traffic planning to keep up. Because let's take a delivery company, logistics company, they can switch from vans to cargo bikes in a week. But before a city has changed the roadscape, if you like, the division between car lanes, parking, bike lanes, pavement, etc., it can take years. So there's often a tension, a disconnect between the speed of the different developments.
Now, do we make a mistake by grouping all non-motorized transport or non-traditional motorized transport together as one? Oh, it's all micromobility, it's or active travel, walking and cycling, then e-scooters, e-bikes, other such things, because an e-bike is very, very different to somebody walking on the speed. And actually, if you get a pedestrian and an e-bike going quite fast colliding, that can be quite painful. Should we actually look at them separately?
Well, then you need to ask yourselves how many categories do you want to create, and you will easily get up in tens or more categories. And let's not forget that micromobility has been with us for a long time, not only bicycles, but think about a wheelchair. That's micromobility. I don't know about people on horseback. Basically, I think micromobility now most often is defined as mobility without a combustion engine and with certain limits as to size, weight, power, maximum speed, mainly to distinguish from cars, buses, trains, trams, lorries, etc. We all know what micromobility is when we see it. We don't need to define it in all detail because we cannot, because technology will catch up with us again and we will need to change the definition.
You're the president of the European Cyclist Federation. If I said to you, right, here's a blank sheet of paper, write down what you want on behalf of your members, what would your top three things be?
Well, the main reason why people don't cycle is concern or perceived concern about safety. We need to make our roads safe for people to ride bicycles, to walk, be they electric, the bicycles electric or not. That's the absolutely most important issue. That's the biggest priority, if you like. But there are different ways to do that. You can do it through infrastructure, safe separate bike lanes. You will need more road space. Another very important measure is lowering maximum speeds for motor vehicles. I've seen a great example in Brussels where they lowered the maximum speed to 30 kilometers an hour, 20 miles an hour, and immediately the number of traffic casualties fell off the cliff. Went down by 50% from one day to another. Very important measure. You know, when the maximum speed is 30 kilometers an hour, and if everybody keeps him or herself, themselves to the maximum speed, the risk of death is almost zero. When you get hit at that speed, you will survive. At 50 kilometers an hour already, the chance of survival is only 50%. So that's the most important thing you can do.
Brought to you thanks to Swaco and AGD Systems. This is Highways Voices from Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024.
A couple of years ago, I went to the ITS European Congress in Hamburg, and one of the most fun things that my wife and I did when we tagged on a couple of days of sightseeing and trying out the technology on transport at the end of the event was to ride in a Moya. Now, a Moya was kind of the stepping stone, I guess I'd explain, between a driven taxi and a driverless shuttle, in as much as it did have a driver, but you would call it up on an app. It would then tell you on the app where to go and meet the vehicle, so it didn't come direct to you. There was kind of like virtual bus stops all across the city, and then when we took a ride from our hotel to the airport, we actually stopped, picked some people up, took them a little way, dropped them off, picked some other people up, dropped them off on the way, picked some other people up, and we all went to the airport together, and it cost about a quarter of the price of going in a taxi, just the two of us all the way. So I just found that completely fascinating and a really great concept. And I knew that the next step would be to remove the driver and just have the driverless aspect. So I've come and met with Jonas Vigger from Moya in Hamburg. And Jonas, you've just been speaking on a panel here at Intertraffic about the lessons learnt from shuttles. What are the lessons learned?
From our manual service right now, the lessons we learned include the experience gained from transporting 9 million passengers since 2019, since we set up our service in Hamburg, but it also meant that we learned how to automate our fleet management using machine learned algorithms to effectively steer supply and demand. But it also meant that we learned about user preferences and learned about creating an attractive on-demand service for our users. And something we see is that, for example, our medium age of users is around 45, which is much older in comparison to other new mobility options. And also looking at the share of genders, we have 49% women using our service, which is also different in comparison to other mobility options. So we're very happy with that, and we want to take these experiences with our manual service and translate them into an autonomous ride pooling service that will will be bookable from 2026 on. Yeah.
I think this is really interesting, the human aspect, the human behavior of it, because at events like Intertraffic, and I mentioned the ITS World Congress where you showed it off down the road in Hamburg, we're very good at telling each other how clever we are and all agreeing on concepts and forgetting the end user and bringing the end user with us. So it seems like you've really worked hard on getting them to understand concepts. I mean, for example, I just mentioned the virtual stop. So rather than a traditional taxi would draw up right outside your hotel or your home or where your office, wherever you need to be picked up, and drop you off exactly where you want to be dropped off. Here, it was slightly different, which I guess makes it easier to automate in the future. Did customers understand that? Did they embrace it? Did they get used to it? Or was there a bit of a pushback of, well, why can't you come to where I am?
Well, it is a widely accepted concept now. Like, we've been operating for the last 5 years, and people understand why we chose the concept of virtual stops. It's also a legal requirement, because we're not a taxi service per se. So this is one of the features. But what we were also trying to tell people or make people understand is that we were trying to replicate the experience of a private car in a shared mobility service. So you've driven our vehicles, you saw it yourself, you saw that we have specially designed seats for our passengers to replicate this feeling of privacy. We have wooden floors, we have the vehicle screens, we have Wi-Fi, we have charging options for our passengers to charge their phones and laptops and everything. So I think it's very important to come up with solutions that really replicate the flexibility and the comfort of private cars for actually to be able to take individual cars off the road.
And I'm fascinated. So you said that we're close to a launch of the driverless service. How's that going to work? Is it across the whole of the city, or will it be only on certain routes and a kind of slimmed down coverage to what we get from the human-driven version?
We will start with an operating area in the city center, so our autonomous vehicles can learn in very difficult and complex traffic situations. We will start in the area around Winterhude in the city center, but we will gradually expand our service to the whole city of Hamburg until 2030. So our aim is to cover the whole 700 square kilometers of the city of Hamburg until 2030 with a fleet of up to 10,000 autonomous vehicles.
And I take it that all those human-driven journeys, including the ones that I took when I was in the city, they've all been teaching the vehicle to be driverless.
Exactly. We will take these experiences and translate them into our autonomous service. But I think for the first couple of years, we will still operate with mixed fleets, because we will still need human drivers for our fully accessible vehicles. So wheelchair users can be transported, and we will still need driving staff for that. And actually, something we always underline is that we want to provide a mobility solution that's as accessible as possible, because right now, for example, severely disabled people in Hamburg are transported free of charge with our service. So that's a huge step for them, offering them a new kind of mobility besides public transport.
And finally, when are we going to see it in other cities other than Hamburg?
From 2026 on, we will have developed a autonomous ride-pooling solution that we plan to scale. So in the years after 2026, we will see other cities. We signed a memorandum of understanding for a first project in Berlin, so as another city, but other European cities will follow very soon, and we will follow with our announcements on that.
I look forward to riding it in London one day. Jonas, thank you ever so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
From Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024. Highways Voices.
If you cast your mind back to Tuesday at Intertraffic on Highways Voices, I spoke to Richard Neumann of Swarco about the company's support of the It's Up startup area and sessions at Intertraffic this week. And It's Up has been showing off the very best of new innovations supported by Swarco. And today, that's where Kevin Boris, our reporter here at Highways News and working
this week here in Amsterdam for the organisers, covering some of the must-see sessions. Kevin, you're up covering It's Up all day today.
I am, indeed. Yeah, no, I interviewed Swarco's Laura Kokonea from Swarco Italy, as was, or Swarco Mizar, as was. They, Swarco, as you know, are sponsoring the It's Up event, and they're sponsoring the Swarco It's Up Challenge. That's going to be really interesting because there's a lot of good, very interesting stuff going on. She was very excited by the prospect of these new startups. They've identified some very, very good ones already. Obviously, there's a whole hall for startups. Are definitely worth getting down there because you will see people who in 10 years' time will be running this industry. The company that won the challenge in 2022 ended up being, well, Swarco sort of mentored them, and they were bought by Maya Vision quite soon after. So that would suggest that there's some good people around. I interviewed them as well at the time. So I think the It's Up challenge is going to be interesting. I always like seeing startups because you walk around and looking in. It's not always the ones that have got sort of flashy stuff to show you. Sometimes it's just a poster or just some documents pinned to a wall.
I worked many years ago for a self-made millionaire in America, and he talked about when it comes to investment, you've got probably 50% of the companies you invest in will go bust and you will lose all your money. 30% of the companies you invest in, you'll get your money back, and that'll be the end of that. And 20% of the companies you invest your money in, that's where you will make the big bucks. And it's probably a similar proportion. We will walk around or go and have a look at the startup area, and in 5 years' time, half the companies will have completely disappeared. The concept will have died and not be seen again. 30% will still be hobbling along, and as you say, 20% will be on their way to running the industry.
But that's the way that, especially this industry, changes. If you look at if you can find the floor plan or the exhibitors list from 2004, there's a lot of companies that are no longer around, and there are a lot of companies who are now part of other companies. It does change, but the startups is interesting because you just imagine startups on 18, 19-year-olds working in a shed somewhere. But it's not the company from who won last time. The guy who started the company up was, I think, 45, 46. It's not just young people. It's people who've come from other companies, sold companies, made money, and invested some of that into a startup. It's not just young people who you can mould and make into sort of, you know, images of yourselves. There's a lot of interesting people involved in the startup sector. So I'm going to be spending the whole day around there chatting with Laura and see what the new riches we can find. Who's going to solve a massive problem that we currently don't know exists?
Yeah, I'm going to go and have a good look around there as well, because I do think that as a business opportunity, if you're here and you're from a large company, you'd be mad not to go and look at the startups, because often you can invest in them at a far better rate than you're going to in years to come. It's kind of like the InterTraffic version of Dragon's Den, but you can get in and you can get involved if you spot a good opportunity or a good idea, and you can often be the first and potentially the exclusive people that use that particular product and do really well out of it in the future. So these companies are looking for the bigger companies with deeper pockets to actually work with them, because let's face it, if it was an obvious win, then they would have already gone out and done it, and they would be having a stand the size of Swarco. So it's a really good opportunity, and it's another thing I think that makes InterTraffic so good, is you've got such a vast array of companies from Swarco, obviously the biggest company exhibiting here, to the companies supported by Swarco, the startups, as you say, with a piece of paper. Kevin, it has been an absolute delight working with you again, 12 years on from my first InterTraffic working with you, where you seem to swerve. I tried to find a photo of you or something of you on any of those videos on YouTube. No. Yes, you're not there, because I was doing all the front of camera stuff and you were going out and finding people for me to talk to. So I haven't been able to show how much you've aged in the 12 years, but if you do find it on YouTube and I'm not sharing the link, then you'll see that I definitely have in the 12 years. And it seems to be a correlation between when I started working with you and we became friends. Yeah. And so, but I will not draw any more conclusions on that.
possible that that might be linked.
Kevin, it's been excellent. That is it for this series of Intertraffic Highways Voices. Although when I say that is it, it's not, because next week on Wednesday, I will be bringing you a bonus edition of Highways Voices, where we will have some of the material I've gathered both on Friday here at Intertraffic and earlier in the week that I haven't been able to squeeze in. So I will bring you that next Wednesday, all thanks to the sponsorship, as we've had all week, of Swarco and AGD Systems. Catch you again soon.
Highways Voices from Intertraffic Amsterdam is brought to you thanks to Swarco and AGD Systems. Join us next week for a bonus podcast from the event.